Here's the song that we'd like to do for all the younger set of people, the teenagers and what have you. This one's called Vacation Zope.
Vacation's over.
It's over. It's over.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and Happy New Year, you beautiful, dorky money nerd, you. I'm happy to report that just before we hit record, OG's challenged me to a polar bear swim. The perfect idea for getting your heart beating and blood moving in 2018. But we'll get your blood moving today with new budget ideas from former Warren Buffett-employed money man, Mitchell Walker. And in our headline segment, we'll tackle the new tax law. What changes are around the corner for your money? We'll ask that question to Tax Audit's Chief Customer Advocacy Officer, Dave Duvall. Of course, we're still throwing out the Haven Lifeline to a lucky listener, answering your letters, and spicing things up with my 2018 style trivia. And now, two guys who I'm surprised are awake today after Mom's big party last night, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hot coffee and warm money talk. Welcome to 96.3, the Benjamin Stacking.
The key that Doug doesn't understand is that we just ran the rerun from last year's New Year's Eve Times Square thing, but we ran that at 9:30.
Mom doesn't know the difference.
No.
She has no idea.
So, you know, we counted down 10. I mean, we were down. We had everybody out of the house by 9:45.
It's living the dream. Hey, everybody. I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. If you are new to the Stacking Benjamin Show, across the card table from me here for 2018 is the one and only new haircut sporting OG.
Is this a new haircut?
Sure. Looks like a new haircut. It looks very, you look very boyish.
I look like a boy. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose rather than girlish.
Well, not that there'd be anything wrong with that either. I'm just saying you look like you're 12 with a bald spot.
Look like I'm 12. Well, that's awful nice, as I just had a birthday. So,
you know what else is nice? Did you see this? M1 Finance is going free. Free.
Just not into making money anymore.
It is. Yeah. That money making thing. That's horrible. Actually, it's really cool. They're going Robinhood, right? Robinhood, the free trading app. But now, instead of trading, if you're interested in investing, check out M1 Finance. Traditionally, you've had choices when it came to online investing tools, traditional self-directed brokerages, which offer a lot of customization, but they also hit you with commissions every single trade. On top of that, they can be clunky and unintuitive. And for more passive investors, of course, there's been this rising trend of automated brokerages, allowing you to easily invest in a portfolio that they manage for you. But then you got to hand over the controls, OG. You find yourself trusting some black box of software, and you can't really personalize the portfolio with those options. So to me, both those have compromises, right? Why compromise with your money? With M1 Finance, you don't have to. They offer a balanced solution like nothing I've ever seen before. Set up a personalized portfolio perfectly tailored to your needs and your own investing goal. And then the portfolio is automatically managed by their advanced technology. It used to be they had the sliding scale of how much they charge based on how much money you had in there. No longer.
Now they just have one scale.
One scale. Zero. Yeah. StackingBenjamins.com/M, the number one finance.com. Today's show also brought to you by our Save 50 course. Our business partner, Kathleen, saved half of her income. Half. And now she and I are teaching you how to do it. StackingBenjamins.com/save the number 50 for more on starting your new year off with saving 50. You know what, OG? We're going to teach people how to save some basic money. First thing you need in 2018, a budget. And I'll tell you, Mitchell Walker, one of the easiest budgets I've seen, asked him to come down and kick off 2018 to tell us about his pouch plan budget. So good stuff there. We also going to talk a little bit about the tax law. So let's get moving.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
In our first headline, we've been predicting this for some time. Krawcheck expands Elvest Robo to 3 service levels with more human advice. We haven't been projecting what Sally Krawcheck's going to do at Elvest, but her firm, OG, added premium and private wealth management tiers with elements of goal-based planning and career advice to their robo-advisor. We talked about this when robos were first rolled out, right? I don't think you can just hand your money to a robot. I don't think people want that. And sure enough, Sally Krawcheck with Elvest, using a recent infusion of venture capital to expand the offering, a digital advice platform for women, to 3 different service levels. I think this is just the beginning. We're going to see this a lot more.
Well, this is the direction of the industry, right? It's using technology to help the investment piece. And we've got a fair idea of the cost structure of that, right? Vanguard is charging 30 basis points. Betterment and Wealthfront are somewhere in the 15 to 25 basis point piece. So we know that that's approximately the cost. I'm still pretty convinced that all those companies are losing money. So I don't know that 15 or 25 basis points is going to be the number to make it work. But you can't just turn it over and not pay attention to it again. People want interaction. People want to have conversations about what the money's for. And that's where you get the financial planning piece. And I think the biggest problem with all of this, and Betterment started this, I don't know, probably about 6 or 8 months ago, right? When they came out with the, hey, you can talk to a CFP anytime you want. Well, they have like 3 million clients or something like that. There's no way that they can, there's not enough CFPs in the world to handle Betterment's account base. So I think that's where they're going to run into, is they're going to run into the scalability of that. That's going to be the problem.
I think it will be. It's funny when you see the advisor channel on one end, right? Advisors moving more toward embracing technology. On the other hand, these technology platforms that were supposedly just the answer to our dreams starting to move the other way upstream. It's all going to be the same. We're going to end up with Betterment competing directly against Merrill Lynch.
I don't see that happening, but okay.
Maybe 50 years from now?
Maybe, yeah, a quarter to never.
And in our second headline, obviously, I don't know if you've seen this or not, and I say that jokingly, because we've all seen it. There is a brand new tax law in the United States, and joining us on My Dad Shortwave to tell us what we need to know about it, Dave Duvall, Chief Customer Advocacy Officer at Tax Audit. How are you, man?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm great.
I'm not sure about the tax law,
all right. But
I'm fine.
Well, help us understand, what do we need to know here on January 1st that we didn't need to know anything about earlier, Dave?
The first thing you need to know is this is not simplification. This is complication. There are so many changes. This is the biggest change since 1986 when we had the last major reform. You can pick winners and losers. The drawback is you're really not going to know until you do your taxes in 2019 for the tax year 2018 and compare it to 2017. There are so many changes. Just an example is the medical. It was supposed to go away. They increased it to 10% a couple of years ago. Now it's back for 2017 and 18 with a 7.5 haircut, if you will. That's another big one on the Schedule A. We used to be able to take local and state taxes that we paid. Now it's being capped at $10,000 with property tax. So certain states will lose on that. And again, when I do taxes, the person sitting on the other side of the desk from me, my client, should never know whether I love Obamacare and think it's the best thing since sliced bread, or I think it's the worst thing for our country. They shouldn't know whether I'm a Democrat or Republican. They shouldn't know whether I favor all, part of, or none of the new tax bill. I'm going to do their taxes based on the current law available to assist them. But truly, these changes, and we just started talking about some charitable contributions. A lot of people that have done charitable contributions in the past realize there's a limit of 50% of their AGI. That is moved to 60% for 2018. But they may not be itemizing like they did the prior year. And they're really not going to know until they do their taxes. EBE, Employee Business Expense. Best example I can give you, traveling salesman. Traveling salesman does the wining and dining for clients, drives 30,000 miles, does a form called 2106, Employee Business Expense. That's gone. They're going to have to go back to the employer and say, dear employer, I don't want to pay all this money out of my pocket and not get a tax break for it. What should I do? gambling losses. That's changed entirely. It used to be we put our gambling winnings on the front page of the 1040, line 21, other income, and we put our expenses on line 28 of the Schedule A. But again, they're now saying, well, let's, for gambling winnings, we're going to subtract the cost of the gambling winnings and basically net it by saying if you had to have travel to go gamble, which most people do, that's going to decrease the gambling winnings. The IRS isn't going to have that number available to them.
Las Vegas doesn't like that one, Dave.
Actually, they're liking a little, because it's going to help the gambler reduce what goes on the front page of the 1040 and affects their AGI.
Gotcha.
They're not talking about putting it on the Schedule A now.
Gotcha. Now, when it comes to my taxes this year, this particular tax filing deadline, is there anything I need to know? Because early on you said, you know, we're not going to know until we file our taxes in 2019. Anything I got to do differently between now and April 15th this year?
Surprisingly, there's very little change. One of the changes is the medical. It was 10%, but it's going to be 7.5%.
Okay.
But that's a minor thing. For the most things, it's 2016 revisited.
Okay.
But the same things that applied in 2016 apply for 2017. They should look at harvesting losses on stocks. They should make their records ready to go, because truly in an audit, the IRS is only asking for the same documentation that they had when they prepared the tax return. Oh, but like you mentioned earlier when we were talking on the Roth conversion, in 2018, you're not going to be able to undo it. It's a permanent decision, as opposed to the last few years when you could do what's called a recharacterization, you know, how simple the Roth is.
Yeah.
So again, even if you do it in 2017, you better think twice and make sure that's what you want to do. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying come January 1st, you can't look back and go, well, that didn't work out well, I want to undo it, because you won't be able to.
What if you didn't know what your income was and you put too much in? I mean, that's one of the reasons people recharacterize, right?
Yep. You're absolutely right. And they can do that for like an IRA.
Okay.
They put money into an IRA and go, oh, I made too much money to take a deduction for it, so I can recharacterize that. They'll still be able to do that. The one they won't be able to do is when they convert from an IRA to a Roth IRA and then want to change their mind, as you said, recharacterize.
Yeah.
They won't be able to do that after January 1st.
Gotcha. Now, and I want to define something for people that don't know what you're talking about with medical.
Sure.
You said it used to be 10%. So you're saying that the way the law was that 10% of your medical could go as an itemized deduction? Is that what that means?
No, actually, it's a little convoluted. Let me start by, you add up all your medical, dental, vision, optometrist, all of that, and then that number looks at 10% of your adjusted gross income, AGI.
Gotcha.
And that 10% was subtracted. Anything left became a deduction on your Schedule A. This year in 18, it'll be 7.5%, though.
Got ya.
It's less of a cut.
Yeah, which means then, if I'm understanding this correctly, that there's going to be fewer people itemizing because of that, possibly.
Probably. Absolutely right. Probably. But again, if I had huge charity, that's still going to be allowed. If I had huge medical, that's still going to be allowed. It's the property tax and even the interest, the mortgage interest going forward. And this is a part where you were grandfathered in, meaning for you and I, on our houses that we own currently, there's the $1 million limit on the loan to be able to deduct the interest that's associated with that. And we know that there's the extra $100,000 for the equity loan. However, equity loans go away on January 1st unless you already have it. The mortgage limit, $1 million, moves to $750,000 for anyone buying a house after December 15th. And alimony, here's another grandfather one. I get divorced today, the alimony that I pay is going to be a deduction on my return, and my ex-spouse has to include it as income. In 2019, not 18, but in 2019, any divorce decree or change in a current one, that alimony is not deductible, nor is the alimony paid income. So some people will be able to do it, some won't. Again, we call it the grandfather clause. So it's not an all or nothing. And that's why it's kind of hard to look at someone as they walk in and go, law change is going to favor you. Right. You can't do it.
Right. I'm laughing because I'm thinking it's January 1st and a lot of people had maybe too much to drink last night. But you talk, it makes people want to go drink right now, Dave.
Hey, and I go with them because I'm a pro at this, but whoa.
Well, I'm looking at the time and I'm over, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. You guys are coming up on a busy time of year for you. Tell us a little bit about what you all do over there at Tax Audit.
Well, at Tax Audit, we actually have 8 million members and we handle audits for them for state and federal. And we handle 35,000 a year. It's at a low price point where that's why we have so many members. But the drawback is audits aren't going away. It doesn't matter. This law change didn't affect that. It means there's different things the IRS and state will audit. And that's kind of why we're here to protect the little guy.
Awesome. And I will link to taxaudit.com on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Dave, happy new year. And thanks a ton for spending a few minutes with us kind of sorting through the spaghetti.
Back at you, sir. And thank you.
Thanks a lot to Dave Duvall. You know, OG, you know, this is one of those times, isn't it? When you kind of got to take a look at what this law is all about and how it affects you.
Well, individual circumstances, right? Kind of have to look at your 2016 because you probably haven't started your 2017 taxes yet, or maybe you're just starting to think about it. But there's going to be some things that are simpler to do, right? You may not itemize anymore, and that means you have way less record keeping and you can just put that $24,000 number in there or whatever you qualify for and be done with it. But then again, if you're a business owner or a partial business owner, you've got all sorts of other, you know, deductions and rules to deal with there. So taxes are not quite to the postcard level that we were promised.
No, not yet.
We're well on our way. No, we're not. We're not even close.
So the two lessons, we'll be digging in more into the tax law, obviously, in future episodes. But for now, I think the lesson is number one, read. I like this idea of forget about the politics of the situation. It's the law of the land. So learn what you got to know and how it affects you. And then on the other end, hand your money off to a robot. Maybe you're handing it off to a robot and a human.
Cyborg.
Mitchell Walker getting ready to come down to the basement. He spent 15 years as vice president of finance for a Berkshire Hathaway company.
Never heard of him.
One of Warren Buffett's guys. He's a guy who scrambled to make a living before that. I love Mitchell because listen to this. He's owned or managed restaurants, insurance agencies, car dealerships, and employment recruiting firms. Been the CFO of a community college, a county commissioner, and a city councilman. If anybody understands financial language of today's business and government entities, guess who it is? Lucky for me, we get to call him Neighbor Dude because he lives right down the road in Mount Pleasant. Mom gets excited whenever we meet the neighbors. So let's say hello to our neighbor, Mitchell Walker, and Budgeting 101. And joining me down here in the basement, Mitchell Walker. How are you, man?
I'm great, Joe. It's good to be here.
Dude, you got to watch out for the table. I told you.
You didn't. I just bumped it.
If we bump the table too hard, this is going to be a whole different interview about how you get coffee off of the basement floor.
Coffee wrestling, a new sport.
That's right. Don't make mom have to come down here.
Ooh.
Right. We don't want that. Hey, so this is a great day. Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk about the pouch plan budget. This was born out of your own frustration. But before that, you've got a lot of history with balancing budgets because you work for a company associated with some guy named Warren Buffet or something like that.
Yep. There's a lot he's got. So he has a buffet of things. I was one of his money men. I was a CFO of a company that he owned here in East Texas, actually. But it was really neat. I got exposed to, you know, the best practices in America as far as budget and financial performances and analysis and that type of stuff from a corporate standpoint. You know, what an amazing thing to get to see and be a part of and to learn about.
Does that actually transfer, though, to budgets at home?
Wow, that's the real key. You just nailed it right there. You know, the thing is that most people get scared of a budget because it sounds like it's so restrictive. But in the corporate world, budgets are how we make sure things happen. That's how we make sure that the things we want to see accomplished are funded and the requirements are there to make sure they're met. And if people could look at that a little differently, their attitude would change about it.
So maybe you're saying that the mug you have is from my favorite area in northern Michigan. So if I want to take a vacation there, and I budget for it ahead of time, you're saying then that's how I make sure that vacation happens instead of getting close to it and there's no cash available.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a change of the way you look at something. It's a paradigm shift is a big word that they use, you know, corporate-wise. But what it means is you just change the way you look at something. Therefore, you accomplish what it is you wanted your money to do rather than constantly struggling to find out how come I can't do what I want to do.
Right. You were talking in the first chapter of the pouch plan. You say the oh no moment. We were semi-newlyweds about 6 months when the cracks started to form in our handling of our monthly bills and expenses. So what happened there, Mitchell?
Well, I missed a car payment that we had recently established, and I was about a week late. And that sweet, wonderful woman just very kindly and gently reminded me of the commitment that we'd made and that I needed to make sure and hit that commitment. And I told her, no problem at all. I'll take care of that. I got it. Next month rolls around, and I forgot again. This time, though, when I go to pay it, I don't have enough money in my account to pay the car payment.
Wow. And so?
Well, it was also to her father.
Oh. Yeah, that's not good, man.
That's really not good.
I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I know that's not very good.
That's not good. That's not good.
So what happened? You got to make an embarrassing phone call?
Well, actually, there is a longer story behind that. He ended up giving us the Suburban about 3 or 4 months later, but we did get the plan established and made those payments in a row, but he just decided that the stress was too much, wondering or not the payment was going to hit there, so he ended up giving us the car.
And this is way early on
this
in your marriage.
25 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then what happened? Did you and Suzanne, your spouse, did you sit down and say, we got to do a better job? How did that turn into the pouch plan?
Exactly. What we did was, it was really, she, with no condemnation or really, you know, a sense of accusation or anything, she just said, look, we've got to put a plan together. And if you can tell me these things, if you can tell me who to pay, how much to pay, and when to pay, she goes, I'll make sure and see that our bills get taken care of. We started with the old envelope system. You know, where you write on each envelope category and then you actually fund it with cash. Now, we had brought together a blended family of seven with five children ages 5 through 17 when we began this marriage journey.
You're bigger than the Brady Bunch.
Pretty close. Well, I mean, it was a hard thing to administrate and take care of, cash envelopes all over the place. And it just did not work for us well, but there were some things we liked about it. We liked having some control that we didn't have before. And we had an idea. And we thought, what if we look at our bank account in a totally new and different way? What if we consider it one envelope and pay a couple of these bills out of that? And we came upon what we would call regular bills, because they're regular in time and amount.
Yeah.
Your rent, car payment, insurance payments, things that don't vary in amount and time each month.
Would groceries fit there?
No, groceries, you go to the grocery store 3 or 4 times a week if you want to.
Okay, right. All right.
So, see, they vary. So gotcha. They would be called irregular.
But like Netflix would be regular.
Right. Something on a subscription would definitely be regular. So, interesting about that was when we started looking at that, Joe, ended up being about 60 to 65% of our total bills. So, here's what we did. We said, okay, we're going to put enough into our bank account to take care of all these regular bills that come due until the next paycheck. And then we're going to deposit into that bank account just enough to cover those bills and nothing more. In other words, we changed our bank account from a place where we parked our money while we were waiting to decide what to spend it on, to a vehicle where every dollar we deposited in there was considered spent the second we put it in.
That's a huge mental transformation, but it sounds actually, I mean, administratively, it sounds really easy though.
It's easy. It's simple. It takes 65% of your bill paying life and puts it on automatic. This was done back in the 80s, actually. Early 80s, actually.
Yeah.
Internet banking, electronic banking was relatively new, but we started using that too. So we really automated, I'm going to say, 60 to 65% of our bill paying life quickly. So my wife turns around and takes the rest of those envelopes, throws them in the trash, and picks up a coupon organizer. Just a regular
little box with the little like file
smaller than that, 4 inches by 7 inches, fits in your pocket.
Yep.
It had 10 or 12 sections in it.
Okay.
And she wrote in on those sections our other expenses, the irregular. That's where our groceries went. That's where our household expenses went. That's where our child care went. That's where gifts, school activities. Oh, hair and nails.
Yeah, because your hair is very pretty.
Thank you very much. So is yours, by the way.
Thank you.
I see three or four of them.
I was going to say,
gorgeous.
Both of them are fantastic on my head, man. I would assume, though, if you put those into that organizer system, the first few months you weren't getting it right. Like, you kind of guessed, and it had to have been wrong.
A lot of guesstimate, right, you start out. So you start with a great big miscellaneous, because you haven't been tracking this stuff, so you're exactly right. You don't know right where it went, so don't be hard on yourself. You're going to learn, but you're going to learn as you actually spend, and that's another advantage to using real cash in this system is it's really easy to move. I mean, if you see your groceries are running out of money, you don't have enough to feed yourself, you may want to take some out of your hair and nail pouch. You may want to take some out of your entertainment. You may want to take some out of your miscellaneous, but it's simple to move it. And after a couple of months, you really will get into a habit where you set targets for yourself that you want to spend, and then your spending habits change to match those new targets because they're right in front of you constantly.
So this involves not just these pouches, but it also involves a discussion.
Oh, absolutely. It's maybe the most powerful thing about the pouch plan is that it puts two of you putting a plan together. And, you know, your audience is going to know because they're well informed of what goes on out there in the financial community. Money is the number one reason for divorce in America. Mm-hmm. When you take the inability to handle it correctly, and then you add to it the inability to talk about it in a way, you combine those two things, that causes more divorces in America than anything else. I can sit right here and tell you face to face, and every one of your listeners, from the bottom of my heart, that my wife and I have not had an angry word, much less an argument over money for 24 years. That's because we had a plan, we had a guide, we had a way to handle those discussions in a framework where we both came out winning.
You use the phrase in the book a lot, financial foundation. You talk about building a house and your financial foundation. What does that mean? What does a financial foundation look like?
It's where you can build anything on it that you dream. Some people have the dream to send their children to college. Some people have the dream to fund some great college somewhere, or maybe a university, or maybe it's to have a fantastic retirement. Maybe it's to give away a lot of money. But if you don't have that firm foundation, it's going to fall as you begin to erect it. And that's what a budget or a plan is, the foundation on which you can build those financial dreams. But if it's not a good foundation, the stress will cause it to fail.
But I like the fact that you say in here at one point, Mitchell, that you don't want to just live in the basement, though. I mean, you start.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up today, Joe.
I take exception to that.
I thought you might.
What the hell's that about? I love living in the basement. So what comes first then? Because I'm guessing that you save money first. So I'm just trying to go through the workflow here. Money comes in from my paycheck or my business, whatever, however I make money. Do I take money out first for those dreams and then take the money that's those fixed expenses, those regular expenses, and put that aside then second? Or do I establish the budget plan first, figure out what I've got, and then I figure out how to get the money saved?
I think the best thing is to figure out where you currently are.
Okay.
You know, the better the information and the truer and the more accurate it is, the better decisions you can make. So most people do not know where they are.
Yeah.
You know, most of them just are happy if they can get to zero each month.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really bad plan. And, you know, going back to the analogy of the basement, what that is intended to really bring forth is that as you start to build on this thing, it should become automatic. It should be out of sight, but it should continue to do its job.
Right.
And that's what a good budget plan will do. It becomes automatic in your life if you're doing, or the pouch plan does. The pouch plan does that really because what my wife asked me to deliver to her was something that she could just follow the instructions on, that we'd agreed on, and it was automatic.
We all like that.
We all like that. And it will work. It'll work. If you can review me from the equation, then we'll pay our taxes. So the government does that. They remove you and me from the tax-paying equation, and they take it out of our paycheck before we get it.
That's a great analogy, because I remember working with some high-net-worth people, and I'd ask them. I remember this one guy made over $250,000 a year, and I asked him how much he pays in taxes. And I had his W-2 in front of me, and he said, what do you mean? I said, how much do you think you pay the federal government in taxes? And he said, $35,000. Not anywhere close.
Not even close.
He was, you know, because he was in the alternative minimum tax bracket. He was closer to 70, but no idea. And you're right. We have no idea because of the fact that it's taken right out of our hands. And so pouch plan budget works automatically because now I have these set. But I guess you do feel it when you go to that pouch and it's empty.
Absolutely. And you should feel it. Because if you decided ahead of time that this was important to you, and now you've put yourself in a situation where it's not happening, you should feel the pain. You should feel the regret. You should feel the remorse for making a poor decision. Maybe you won't make it again next week.
Yeah, so it's kind of you're training yourself for next week, next month, next whatever period. Is there a period, I was going to ask you that, is there a period where this works better over? Is it a month? Is it a week? Or is it a pay period?
Pay period.
It's a pay period.
What we did in the pouch plan was because money comes in by paychecks.
Yeah.
But it basically goes out over a monthly flow. So the proprietary spreadsheet that we give away does that. You put your information in there by paycheck, and then it'll analyze it on a monthly basis and over a yearly basis. But your expenses you put in by how much they are each month.
Gotcha. It's funny. I'm looking at the clock and we are out of time, but we just scratched the surface. You start off in the book, The Pouch Plan Budget, The Simple Way to Find Hidden Money, Improve Your Life and Build Wealth. You talk about the necessary ingredients. We talked about a lot of that. The recipe, then putting it together, timing expenses and the cash hierarchy. That's an important one, obviously. Balancing your budget. What do you have to, need to, and want to? Tip, shortcuts, best practices. I know we can't get to a lot of the best practices, but can you give us one or two before we got to say goodbye, Mitchell?
Yeah, the mini pouches. That's one of the best things we do. People worry about carrying cash around, and I understand that. There's actually less risk with cash than there is from ID theft today. You know, 10 to 1 more ID theft than there is cash theft.
Yeah.
But I have a mini pouch. My wife has a mini pouch. And if I'm heading off, like I came here to see you today, and I'm going to take some stuff back from my Christmas presents, do a little more shopping. So I brought my mini pouch over, and I have like $200 in my gift section that is in my mini pouch today. Typically, that would be at my pouch at home and safe and secure, hidden amongst my socks and my underwear.
don't let Doug know that as you go out, because that guy will hit you up for cash. If he knows that there's $200 on you, and he's pretty good about asking for that money. That's good. And I was going to ask, is there a way, though, to automate it? Have you seen people have success with automating the patch plan?
Yes. And as you build the habits, you can automate more. We do encourage people to start with cash. You feel the real spending. There's no tracking involved because it automatically balances.
It tracks itself, yeah. It
tracks itself. So it takes all the math, all the accounting, all the skills out of budgeting. And so every ordinary person can do it. And then you will move to where you'll use more, maybe a credit card or something. I mean, we no longer pay cash for gas because it's a pain. And so, you know, we do use our debit cards for that, but we leave the money in there. We know approximately how much it's going to be.
Got it.
So, yes, as you advance, you can move off of the program some, but, you know, it's almost like AA. You know, at first we ask you to
Sure.
break that addiction.
Right.
Let's get you going down the right road. And then if you want to have a glass of champagne to celebrate, you know, can do so.
I mean, we see that a lot in financial planning. I like Dave Ramsey for people starting out because having a healthy respect for cash and no debt is great. But you're a guy that's been a CFO before. Debt can be an okay thing, but you got to have a healthy respect for a dollar before you do that. Yeah. The Pouch Plan Budget. Where do people get this, Mitchell?
They get it on Amazon, and they can come to the website at pouchplan.com and get it. And it should be coming out at Barnes & Noble's and the other ones in the first quarter of 2018.
That's awesome. And you've got resources at pouchplan.com
Absolutely.
Too, right?
We give away a whole bunch of stuff. We want people to succeed in this. And just come take a look, and we want you to come there, pouchplan.com.
Great way to start off your year getting your budget together, whether it's the pouch plan or some other way. Get your budget together here today because, man, that way you'll have a great 2018. Mitchell Walker, thanks for stopping by the basement, man.
Completely my pleasure, Joe.
Hey, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and another year has gone by already. 2017. I remember it like it was yesterday. But on to new developments. OG and I are headed out for a polar bear swim. Gotta grab my trunks and maybe a swim cap. But first, let's dive into your trivia, New Year's style. What were the top three destinations in the United States where people rung in the new year? One answer should be obvious, so let's shoot for two out of three at least. I'll be back with your answer and maybe my swim fins and blow-up floaties right after this.
Talked about this stat before, but this is scary. According to a 2016 Gallup poll, 48% of all Americans don't own any stock. And I realize it could be daunting when it's time to start something new, but here's a great thing. Getting invested is more to do with taking baby steps than leaping headfirst into Wall Street. Here's Brian Barnes, founder of M1 Finance, on just how easy it is to be invested.
So you just either log on to the website or use the mobile application. We're native on Android and iOS, and it takes about 3 minutes, and your first $1,000 that you deposit is managed for free.
I'd love to say the free $1,000 is a special deal I made for you, but Brian and M1 Finance are that good to everybody. With M1, you can select from one of dozens of professionally designed portfolio pies, or you can customize it, as mom says, to your heart's content. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/M1Finance for more. That's stackingbenjamins.com, M1Finance.com for more. So just fire up their mobile app, M1 Finance, be invested.
When you're done messing around with us, who do you want to teach you some money tricks? That nerd who talks over your head, or your favorite basement-based geeks? Kathleen Selmans operates our Stacking Benjamins classroom, and to make up for the fact that we don't teach you anything here on the show, she's created a whole lot of tools you'll absolutely love. Head to learn.stackingbenjamins.com for details, and use coupon code DOUGROCKS for 10% off. Yeah, you're welcome. Welcome back, trivia fans. It is on. OG and I just drew straws, and I'm jumping in first during the second half of the show. But first, here was your trivia question. What are the top three destinations in the United States to ring in the new year? The answer? I'm sure you guessed New York City. Only an idiot wouldn't get that one. And maybe you even picked Disney World in Orlando. But did you tack on Las Vegas, baby? If you yelled, hells to the yeah, I think I just found my people. But right now, I'm about to spend New Year's Day swimming like a polar bear. See ya!
Dude, you are cruel.
Well, yeah, what Doug didn't know was that both of the straws were short, so he was going to lose no matter what.
It was so bad.
And but you see how I'm just standing out here in my like parka, and he thinks like I've got my bathing suit underneath here, but it's not. It's just pants and a shirt like normal. But I convinced him to go first because I said, well, I got to videotape it for it to be legit. So let me videotape first, and then I'll show you how to do it, and then you can videotape me.
That is so bad.
He's going to videotape me walking back.
It is so bad. It's like stealing candy from kindergartners. I mean, he's so excited. Yeah. And
I think you should put more on, though, than the banana hammock.
I'm not going there. Hey, let's...
A thong for a...
Let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends over at Haven Life Insurance Agency in 2018, you know what they're going to do, OG? They're going to disrupt the life insurance industry like they did last year by focusing on those two things you value most.
Tax cuts and robo-advisors.
How about your money and your family? Your family and your time.
How about your money and the stuff in the bank?
Bang. It's why they created a high quality, affordable term life insurance policy issued by Mass Mutual. You can purchase entirely online. And guess what? Qualified healthy applicants, they don't skip to the medical exam. They completely skip the medical exam. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote about life insurance the modern way. That's stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life. And today, we're saying a big hello, throwing out the lifeline to our new friend, Kyle. Well, our old friend, Kyle.
Joe and OG, I love the show. I've been listening for a couple of years. Why I haven't learned anything, I thought maybe you guys would surprise me and have some good information on this. I'm going to be leaving my current job soon, and I have a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k with them. I've rolled over a traditional 401k before, and the paperwork's pretty straightforward, but I've never had to roll over a Roth 401k. What all do I need to know that's different in order to do this on my own?
All right. Thanks for the question, Kyle. You know, that's a big question. A lot of people, OG, have never rolled over 401k to a IRA or maybe even to their new 401k plan. So they're not really sure how it works.
Well, the mechanics of it work the same, whether it's a traditional 401k plan, pre-tax plan, or if it's a Roth, you just have to put it in the right place. So the first step is to make sure that you've got a destination account set up. So you want to contact whatever brokerage company that you're going to do business with and open the traditional IRA or open the Roth IRA. And then once that's accounted for and opened, you're going to contact your 401k provider. Now you have to do this after you leave work. And some people try to do it right away, but the fact is that it takes HR probably the better part of a month, you know, to reconcile the fact that you're gone, you know, and get it up to the payroll company and get it up to the 401k provider. So don't waste your time trying to call right away. Generally, it takes at least a couple of weeks, maybe a month. And then you're just going to contact the 401k company and say, hey, I don't work at ABC Corp anymore. I'd like to roll it over to my other plan, my IRA or my 401k or my Roth IRA. Make the check payable to, you know, Bob Jones, courtesy of Fidelity or wherever the brokerage company is. And they write all that paperwork up and generally send you the check directly. They're a little reticent to send it to the investment company because they don't want to be responsible for it. So send it to you, and then you have to go ahead and forward it on to the brokerage house.
But it's usually made out to the brokerage house, care of you. So yeah. It's a check's not made out to you, so that'll avoid some possible oops, somebody depositing that in the wrong place.
It's not going to be able for you to be deposited into your account. And the terminology I think really matters here. A lot of times people call it a rollover, but it's really not. It's a trustee to trustee transfer. And why that matters is because the IRS has come out with a pretty specific rule in the last couple of years that you can only do one rollover per year. Well, a rollover is when you get the money and then you have to put it back in, right? A trustee to trustee transfer is when you take money from your 401k plan that was managed at Fidelity and you transfer it into your IRA that's at, you know, M1. That's a trustee to trustee transfer. You don't touch that money.
Which means that if you do get a check made out to you, you did it wrong.
Yep. Yeah, you want to do a direct transfer to the new plan. But otherwise, pretty simple. Any rep on the phone should be able to help you with it. If it's a big company that your 401k plan's with currently, you can probably open a Roth or a traditional IRA with that company. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like a Fidelity. If your 401k is at Fidelity and you open an IRA and a Roth at Fidelity, you can probably do all this online.
Very, very easy.
Without even doing it. You know, Fidelity will be okay with that because, you know, they're keeping the money. They don't really care what account number it's under. If you're trying to go to a different firm, generally you have to call in for that.
Thanks for the question, Kyle. And guess what? We're going to send Kyle out a co-branded Stacky Benjamin's Haven Life Greatest Money Show on Earth t-shirt. My favorite of our t-shirt designs. So, Kyle, that code is coming your way, big guy. It is totally the greatest circus.
You're the ringleader.
It is a crazy time, especially with Doug out. Check him out there doing calisthenics.
I know. Like, he's thinking he has to warm up. You warm up after you do the polar plunge. That's just awkward with that whole setup and the jumping jacks and everything. It's just...
Well, before he went out there, though, Doug brought down the mail, and this one comes to us from our good friend Scott. Scott says, hey, Stackers, a little background info. I was a cop for 17 years and left that employment recently at age 42. We had a state-required retirement plan. The employee, me, the employer, and the state all contributed to the defined benefit plan. Defined benefit plan, by the way, means a pension plan.
Pension, right, yep.
I currently have an account balance of $123,243 that gets increased every quarter by a few percentage points. We can't draw retirement until age 53, in which I'd receive an estimated $2,200 a month for life if I choose the no survivor benefit. I could do nothing now, and this would be what would happen when I turn 53. One other option when you leave is they'll give you 150% of your total account balance, roughly $185,000, that I could roll over to an IRA. But then, of course, no monthly pension at 53 for life. The state retirement washes their hands of you and says goodbye. Currently, our net asset value is around $1.2 million, which is a combination of IRAs, 457, 403B, 529 plans, home, cash, etc. We have no debt other than the remaining $190,000 on the mortgage, which we pay additional principal to. My wife's a full-time high school math teacher, and I'm currently trying out the stay-at-home dad thing, which has been good for me. Our two sons are age 9 and 11. We each have term life insurance, and I draw my pension and die before I'm old and gray. My wife gets the remaining balance of the state retirement account. Scott's going to tell us I'm a blood type B, and I'm an Aquarius, and I enjoy long walks in the park. No, I'm kidding, Scott. Lots of good detail here. You getting this, OG?
I'm sorry, what?
Great. Scott continues. Oh, it's funny. He then says, I'm trying to get as much info in here because I always hear you guys say, well, we don't know X and we don't know Y, blah, blah, blah. My wife makes about $3,800 a month after taxes, and I have veterans disability payments of $1,278 month tax-free. She contributes to her state teacher's pension, and we live very frugally and comfortably. I also plan to start working again, mostly part-time for a few years and then more later. Now Scott gets to the question, assuming average annual returns in the market, which of the two options would be better in the long run? Leave the state retirement as is and wait until 53, or take the 150% amount and roll it directly to an IRA? I'll give you a lot of information to basically learn nothing, as I'm a longtime listener. Keep up the mediocre work, Scott.
He knows how to butter up his hosts.
Mediocre's good. That's a plus. Yeah.
Step up. Exactly.
So what do you think?
I like option C, which he didn't mention. So let's think about it this way. If he gets his pension at 53 and it's $2,200 a month, right? That number he didn't say, but it's probably fixed for life. So over his lifetime from 53 to 63 to 73 to 83, that 22, the value of that 2,200 in real purchasing power is going to decline. That's a big risk when you look at the longevity of retirees and, you know, being 43, my goodness, there's a strong chance that he lives to be in his 90s, right? So right. The value of that $2,200 at age 83 is only going to be roughly half, maybe even a little less than half today's dollars. On top of that, we've got 10 years between now and 53 anyway that inflation is just going to eat into the value of that $2,200. If you just look at it from a straight return calculation standpoint, you say, well, in 10 years, can I take $180,000 and turn it into enough money to pay out $2,200? I don't think so. I think you have to get to around $600,000, $650,000 to be able to do that. And that'd be a pretty tough pill to swallow. You're right. I mean, it couldn't happen. Last year, the stock market's up a whole bunch, right? 2017. But from a planning standpoint, I wouldn't plan on that. What I would look at, on the other hand, is saying, can I get the $2,200 maybe instead of age 53? Could I make it happen at age 57, let's say, or 58? If you can wait that long to, quote unquote, turn on that pension income, then I think you can take the lump sum, invest it on your own, and when you get to 57 or 58 or whenever you have enough money in that account to draw the 2,200, not only can you draw the 2,200 then, but you can draw it with inflation into the next 30 or 40 years of your retirement.
The other thing that's attractive about that from my standpoint is that, that's what that 2,200 is with no survivor benefit at all. So with the 2,200, if he takes the pension option, he passes away, family gets nothing. If he's got it rolled to an IRA, family gets whatever's still left in the account.
Yeah. And there's ways that you can prevent that too, right? You got to use some insurance techniques to calculate that. You want to look at the difference between what they call the life-only benefit, which is that 2,200 number, and then the joint survivor benefit, the one that the missus would sign off on, because she's not going to let you take the 100 and zero. She's not going to, she's going to take 100 and 100. That's when she's going to get.
Not going to happen.
So there's some planning calculations in that as well. But on top of that, boy, I kind of think of a couple other things too. At 53, maybe you don't want the money. What if you don't want it at age 53? You're working and you're making good money and the missus is making good money. Do you want to have another 20? Well, yeah, I'll take 2,200, but if it's unnecessary, right, you're just paying taxes on it and that sort of thing. I like the flexibility of being able to defer that a little bit. If you have low income for a period of time before you go back to work, you can convert it to a Roth IRA, and kind of fill up those tax brackets with, some advanced tax planning in that way. So I would say that you kind of have to maybe shift your plan a little bit. And instead of planning on taking it at 53, maybe plan on taking it at 57 or 58 or 60, and use that $180,000 as an initial first step toward that bigger bucket.
I do love the fact that Scott gave us a lot of information, because this is not a, it's not an easy decision. One of the most important decisions. These are one of those decisions, OG, that you talk about where it's, you know, you want to make sure you make the right decision the first time, because you've got one shot at this.
There's another good point there too, Joe. If you have a timeline that you have to abide by in order to figure this out. So sometimes your employment ends and they say, you've got 90 days to choose this. There's a lot of work that you have to do, because then it's irrevocable, right? Whichever one you choose. Now, maybe they let you choose it, you know, 10 years from now, you can say, well, I'll just take, you know, 150% at that point. But I still like the flexibility of kind of,
I do too,
being the captain of my own ship. I think the final piece on it is, you see a lot of this negative press about state-run pension plans. And that's always a,
that's a fear. Always,
that would be kind of hanging out in the back of my mind too. You've got 10 years before you can touch it. And then you've got 40 years that you want to rely on it. That's an awful long time period between now and your state deciding that they want to make changes to it or something. So
thanks for the question, Scott. If you've got a question for us, of course, we'd prefer that you call the Haven Lifeline, but it's stackybenjamins.com and you'll see questions for the show. Click that link. You'll see the Haven Lifeline. You'll see the mailbox where you can send us a letter, whatever. Scott, by the way, has an awesome PS on this note. Oh, gee.
He's, a postscript?
A postscript. Scott says, I was the guy a couple years ago who said Joe Salcihi was our new safety word. Remember that one?
Nice. I do remember that.
He says, I was a new listener and got really drunk using my riding lawnmower and just totally pulled that out of my butt. And I couldn't believe it when I heard it read on the podcast when I was at the YMCA working out surrounded by a bunch of senior citizens. He hears us talking about using Joe Salcihi as his safety word. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that was crazy, Scott. Thanks for the question. Thanks also to everybody who's left a review of this podcast. Mom has been pleased. We have gotten a lot of great reviews lately, and thank you very much for those. It's amazing whenever people write about the show or people leave us a review what they think about the show. Just the fact, OG, that anybody listens, I think is amazing. Five stars. This one comes to us from Miss Nunchucks going on the refrigerator. Says, great finance show. This was the first finance podcast I started listening to, and now I listen to about a dozen. Be warned, it'll make you think all money talk can be entertaining, which may set the bar high for other shows. I thought the bar's pretty low here, but Miss Nunchucks, that's great. The information is great, although I haven't learned anything, but it's Doug's trivia that keeps me coming back for more. Of course, for us, it's watching Doug do the polar bear swim. That,
I think I can get him to cannonball in. That's good. Like, dude, I'll do it in slow-mo on my iPhone. It's going to look wicked cool. But you got a cannonball.
Yeah, just take that iPhone 4 with you and do a selfie while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Get him to use his own cell phone. Bust his cell phone, too. That's not cool.
That is so bad. Yeah, thanks, Miss Nunchucks, for that very kind review. And if you can leave a review and tell people what they're getting into when they listen to the Stacking Benjamin Show, we'd appreciate it very much. Lastly, want to kick off 2018 on a high note? Well, guess what? OG's taking clients. And how do you get him in your corner working for you and your money? Well, stackybenjamins.com/letter O, letter G, and that will lead you to his calendar and you can see what it would take. What's it going to take to do this show the rest of the week? Hey, I can't do worse transitions, but I didn't know how to get the heck out of that one. Wednesday, we're talking about the debt cleanse. Our friend Nick Clements from Magnify Money, who's always great radio, always fantastic radio. He used to work for big credit card companies, and he knows all the dirt. And guess what? He's going to help you clean up your dirt on Wednesday. So debt cleanse Wednesday to kick off 2018. We got your budget going today with Mitchell Walker. And on Wednesday, we'll help you make sure those messes are all cleaned up that you created last year and maybe before. All right, Doug, take it from here. What should we have learned?
So what should you have learned today? First, spreadsheets, Medsheet. Budgets don't have to be difficult. Check out how easy the pouch plan is. The big point, stop worrying about being perfect and get rolling on better money habits today. The second half of 2018 will thank you when the first half of 2018 ends up with you securely in the black. Second, the tax plan, while there are important changes, it doesn't change the biggest factors. Save money. But the biggest lesson, don't agree to a polar bear swim with OG unless you're okay going it alone. Let's just say there are two parts of my anatomy that could cut diamonds right now. Special thanks to our neighbor down the road, Mitchell Walker, for stopping by the basement with the pouch budget plan. You'll find out more about the pouch plan on our show notes page or at pouchplan.com. Thanks also to Dave Duvall, Chief Customer Advocacy Officer at Tax Audit, for stopping by. You'll find links to Tax Audit on our show notes, or, of course, you can head directly to taxaudit.com. Special thanks also to Joe's mom for the towel and hot chocolate. That woman sure knows that the key to my heart lies in mini marshmallows. This show was created by Joe Salcihi, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Kathleen Selmans handles design, newsletter, and classroom opportunities. If you'd like to learn more, head to stackingbenjamins.com/classes. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm a lot deeper than you realize. In fact, sometimes I just stand in front of my mirror and reflect. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Hey, how come I always have to say the amazing Steve Stewart? That Richie kid's pretty cool, and we don't add any adjectives before his name. What about me? How come I'm never the incomparable neighbor Doug, or the unimaginably cool neighbor Doug, or even the unfathomably intelligent neighbor Doug?
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. What happens in the after show stays in the after show. So for those of you new, Mitchell, are you familiar with the after show at all?
I am not. So that's why, stays where?
It is.
In the basement?
It is so funny. We just got access to more comprehensive stats through Apple. All podcasters did. And you can see when people tune out of your show. And so it was nice for our show is that just because it's hour long and people sometimes only have a 20-minute drive to work, you can see in our stats just a kind of a steady degradation. Like there's not a piece of the show where people just click off and say goodbye, except this part, because people don't know that there's 45 seconds of silence. And then the stats clearly show there's a bunch of our listeners that have no idea that every episode we have this segment.
Really? Well, I'm one of them.
There it is. But you brought a bag of stuff. That we didn't have during your interview. So bring the stuff over.
I leave that upstairs.
Yeah, we gotta see the stuff. Cause you brought this bag when I met you at the front door. Mom and I were like, is that where you got the body? You said you were bringing props.
I did, but I left. They're up in the car.
Oh no!
Yes, they are. They're from the car, but I can make a duck call. Whack, 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 whack. How's that? Does that help?
Well, you're from Mount Pleasant, Texas. You got to make a duck call.
Got to make a duck call. That was a mallard, by the way.
Oh, was that perfect?
Yes. Whack, whack, whack. That was a wood duck.
Oh, I could tell the difference.
Whack, whack, whack. That was a teal.
Oh, totally different.
Yeah.
Way, way, way different. Yeah. Now, you also do hay on the side.
I do. I have about 100 acres of hay meadow that I cut. That was part of my retirement plan. My wife does not like it because she thinks I shouldn't be around big equipment like that, but it is so much fun.
Have you seen, though, there was a story out just a couple weeks ago about the number of part-time farmers. And I'm from a farming family in Michigan. We were fruit farmers. In fact, I would go to track and cross country meets, and everybody, when they'd hear my name, they'd say, "You're the blueberry people." And I'd say, "Yes, we are." So that was us. But there was a story out about as more and more people take up what they call craft farming and part-time farming, there's some serious accidents around that heavy equipment.
There are, and it can be dangerous. I do have a bulldozer, too, and I've almost driven it off a trailer before and scared the bejesus out of me, I guarantee you.
I bet.
But you're welcome to come down and drive my bulldozer someday. It is a lot of fun.
Oh, that'd be so fun. When I was growing up, when I was in high school, I drove a big white tractor plowing fields, mm-hmm. and it was one of those, it was a tractor that was big enough, and I don't know my size tractors. I just know it was big enough, Mitchell, that it was climate controlled in the cab, and I had glass all around me, and I had these wide arms with big rear view mirror stands, and I don't know if I've ever told this story before, but I go down the field, and I'm listening to the Rolling Stones on full blast, and I'm barely driving, I'm playing the drums. And we turn, and there's always trees with branches out, and it would catch the rear mirror, mm-hmm. and the limb would go back and back, and that would bounce off. And so I'd go around. Well, one time there was a really big limb, and this was the best lesson I ever learned, by the way, about managing other people. But maybe not the best, but one of the best lessons, because I worked for my neighbor. He made us call him Rob. So I don't even remember his last name, because all we called him was Rob, my neighbor Rob, Rob and Regina. So Rob was great manager. So I go down the field, maybe fifth or sixth time, go to turn this tractor around, hit this limb. Limb goes back, slingshots right into that side window, completely shatters.
Shattered it.
Takes out the entire side window. Now there's glass all over the field. I got this shattered window. I got to go back and I got to tell the farmer that I just broke his equipment. So I go back. I remember Rob was fixing another tractor in the shop, and I go walking into the shop, and I'm shaking, and I said, "Rob," and he looks at me, he goes, "Yeah," and he could tell I was upset, and he said, "I need you to see something." He comes over, and we walk out, and he sees the side of the tractor, and I said, "I was going down the field, and a limb caught the rearview mirror, and it smashed into the window, and it shattered it." And Mitchell, he just gives me this long look. Just this long, long look. And you know what he said? He said, "Mistakes happen on a farm. And I know you were paying attention and taking care of my equipment. So let's just keep going." And I felt worse.
Yes, you did feel bad. You looked mad as you were telling the story. I'm sitting there going, "Don't cry. Please don't cry."
I felt horrified. That was like a great management lesson. I'm like, oh, just, I was eating myself up because he knew I wasn't paying attention.
Sure.
But, you know, let my insides do the trick. And I'm 50 now. And I'm still killing myself.
You're red. You're glowing.
From the time I was, 16 or 17. But any big farm stories then on your end?
Well, you know, I like to get out there. I don't have a cab on my tractor, so I get me a nice little farmer's tan, you know. It's really gorgeous when I do go swimming somewhere.
Right. You're pale.
I'm pale. Except for these really dark two limbs coming out. My redneck is showing big time. I try not to have any because they're really expensive. Just like you said, that little story right there. Every little story you have on the farm ends up costing a bunch of money.
Yeah.
So I try to limit those things. I guess probably the funniest thing that's happened... First year I cut hay out there about 5 or 6 years ago, I didn't know any better, so I just left the rolls where they fell, and some of them are right by the side of the road. And one night, some kids came by, pushed one of the bales out in the middle of the road and set it on fire.
Oh.
Fire department comes, puts it out, pushes it over on the side of the road, and the kids came back and pushed it back out in the road again and lit it on fire again. So I learned my lesson there. It just needs to keep everything back off the road enough so that...
Isn't that sad?
So you don't encourage that kind of behavior. Yeah,
it's just bait.
Yes, it's bait. Absolutely. It's more than they can stand.
Alongside of the road. I can't think of a time as a teenager I did anything like that. My dad tells stories about going cow tipping. You ever go cow tipping?
No, I saw the movie Cars, though.
That's right.
The tractors.
Tractor tipping.
Right. You know, you look out there in the meadow, though, like right now, I've probably got 300 or 400 big round bales out there. And the other day, I looked out there, and there were 3 coyotes on top of some of those bales out through the pasture. That was pretty funny looking. And they were barking at one another in a really odd you know, high-pitched bark, not a coyote howl like you're typically hear.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of odd to see.
You see a lot of wildlife when you're out there, or is it too loud?
No, they're not scared of a tracker. It's an amazing thing. I'll have coyotes run by me and, you know, 20 feet away, and I'll come out my back door with my 30-06 in the morning to sit them, and they'll run when they're 400 yards away.
I've only seen one razorback the entire 9 years I've lived here. You see razorbacks much?
All the time.
Do you really?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're feral hogs, as we would call them, you know, because you're just, the razorbacks are on the other side of the street over there.
That's right. 800 yards from here. Right. Yeah. Isn't that wild? They got a whole different name in Arkansas.
Yeah, I had about 25 of them the other day right behind my tractor.
A friend of mine told me a story there about getting treed. I'm sure you've heard stories about people getting treed by a hog, too.
Yes, yes. And they're hard to kill, and they multiply because they have no natural enemies once they get to be about 30 or 40 pounds, the piglets do. And so there's nothing around here that'll eat them or kill them once they get that big. So you just see them by the hundreds out there. And actually, my land is real close to some of the reclaimed mine that Texas Utilities had out there in Northeast Texas, which they have been, nobody's been on it for 30 years since they reclaimed the mine and doing all that. So it's like a big game preserve out there.
Yeah, right, right.
So a lot of game comes off of that stuff onto my land, and which it's kind of nice, too. I have some nice deer coming.
I was going to say.
I'll bring you some venison.
That's going to help you during deer season. Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, yum. Well, anyway, Happy New Year again. Thanks for hanging out.
Thank you. It's been a blast.